Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. So a while back, I was meeting with a client that I'm going to call Kristen. And Kristen she originally came to me not because she was working on sexual addiction issues per se with her spouse. She was married, and this woman we're calling Kristen, she had been married for about a little less than a decade. Her husband had been among the many things that they were struggling with in their marriage was this tendency for him to almost never talk about feelings.
You're kidding. When,
no. Of course, right? That sounds shocking. And when I say struggle to talk about feelings, I'm talking about when he would show up to our sessions, when he would come, which weren't often, he would dodge them. I would ask him a question, and me and his wife would sit and look at him for like a minute, sometimes like 2 minutes straight. Just all you can hear is the tick of the clock hanging on the wall. Nothing. All right. And now there were lots of reasons why that happened. Some of which we were able to discover, but a lot which we never did. But over the years, I've had lots of clients who I work with in addiction, outside of addiction too, but specifically within addiction, addicts specifically, who are very much like this guy. When I was fast forward in that story, when I was meeting with her a little bit later, we were getting to a point where sadly it was looking like divorce was going to be on the table. And the reason why was because he literally was not talking to her ever.
Yeah.
He'd stopped a lot of destructive behaviors, but she just was married to someone who just went to work and came home. Anything below the surface, she just could not get out of him. And one day we were talking, and I mentioned a song that you know, a lot of people are probably familiar with. It's called Say Something. And the minute I mentioned the song and the lyrics, she's like, oh my gosh, I know that. And she got kind of emotional, and she said, that's exactly the situation that I'm in. The opening line of that song is, say something, I'm giving up on you. Right? And this poor woman, she was in a place where she was begging him to say something, anything. Open your mouth and talk. And there were lots of reasons why he didn't. And sadly, in this particular case, it eventually ended in the relationship ending. It was a total, complete tragedy. And the real tragedy with it is that it was so needless.
Yeah.
Because there was so much potential there. But that constant pleading when she heard those words, it resonated with her because that second piece was real. She was feeling like she had no other option but to give up. She'd been doing this for so long.
Yeah. And, you know, as I hear you say that, you know, before my own coming out of that place and my own recovery, I probably would have thought, well, what an idiot. Why didn't he just start talking? And yet, as I look back at my experience and a lot of the clients I've worked with, there are some very good reasons. These aren't excuses,
yes,
but they are explanations.
Absolutely.
And I did that a lot. One of my favorite strategies when things would get tough in life was to go quiet, to go silent, right? People would say, where'd Mark go? It's like, I would disappear, man. I was like the stealthy dude. It's like, he was here and now he's not. Where is he?
Yep.
And the reason was I learned, and this is really true for all of us, you know, as people are listening, you find yourself kind of being, you know, avoidant and not saying much and really having trouble getting, you know, deep and opening up yourself and being vulnerable, probably somewhere along the way, when you were growing up as a kid, you learned that to do so was dangerous. It was painful.
Yes.
If you did dare to open up and just be completely transparent and honest, you probably somewhere along the way had a difficult experience where you were criticized, you were teased, it was awkward, it was embarrassing. Maybe you were even had physical pain inflicted on you because you told the truth or got open. But somewhere along the way, your survival brain learned, don't do that. You got to protect yourself. You got to guard yourself. And so we go into this kind of shutdown place. So there are reasons for it. And I like to say to a lot of guys I work with who really struggle with this, I say, you know what? This is a testament to your resilience, to your ability to survive, to your ability as a kid to find a way to make it through. Yeah. And this is what you figured out. And unfortunately, we take all of that with us now into our adult lives. And I like to say it's old strategies that we continue to use that probably don't serve us very well.
Absolutely.
But it's tough. It's tough to break out of them because there's all these voices in you saying, nope, 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 don't do that. Remember how bad that turned out last time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and the guys that I work with, they, you know, all of them, including myself, we're all of us men, for example, we are on that quest to kind of discover and identify and become what it is, what it means to be, what it looks like to be a quote unquote man's man, right?
Yeah.
To man up and to be able to, again, I use big quotes around that. And there's it's a phrase that's often used, but rarely understood, right?
And it's a confusing phrase, right?
So
if you look at our culture, our media, the movies, all the different, you know, modeling and types out there, it seems to be two extremes, right? The big dude made out of a block of granite, right? Who has no feelings or he's impervious to pain. He's unbelievable. And then it seems like the media likes to go to the complete opposite extreme of the little wimpy, whiny, pathetic little dude that has no power to do anything except be ridiculous.
Absolutely.
And we have both of those ends, right? That they're showing us.
Well, you know what? What I've actually discovered is that there's actually kind of a third piece to that. It's kind of a triangle. I actually was at a seminar about this, a training about this years ago, but it was so true. And I can't remember what they called it, but it was basically the Homer Simpson mentality, right? Where the media, they will portray, you know, being a man as being either, you know, like you said, etched block of granite, doesn't talk, you know, is about as talkative as a block of granite, or the guy who's just weak and can't handle his stuff and whatever else. But that third one is almost more insidious because it kind of incorporates a little bit of both, but on a deeper, I think, emotionally more damaging level, which is that men are just being a man's man is just being a buffoon.
Yes.
It's being just emotionally just out of it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Just like I just don't understand, you know, it just doesn't even cross my mind.
Right. It's the whole thing, you know, he just doesn't get it.
Yeah. I'm just oblivious, right?
To it.
And so,
So
there's these three parts. And I, you know, when I work with clients, very rarely is it the case where I don't find some resonance with a wife that I'm working with when it comes to this woman, Kristen, that I'm describing. Mm-hmm. I have never once in my entire career had a couple come in and just say, I don't know what's going on, Steve. We talk so much and he shares so much with me that we're going to be done. Like, right. Like we talk all the time. We haven't had sex in 9 months. Like we talk all the time. Why, you know, what, you know, we're you're our last hope. How do we talk less? Like no right. one's ever done that.
Yeah. Right.
It, what is it always, right? It's always on some formal level. It's the other side. And it isn't just talking, although saying something for some of us, for some of our listeners, just saying something like the husband of my Kristen story, maybe that is a starting point, right? Yeah. Maybe it is just saying something.
Yep. Something.
Absolutely. Right.
But it isn't. Yeah, you're right. It also just isn't chit chat. It's not just chatter, because I do have couples I work with where there is talking,
yes.
but it's very surface.
Well, they talk at each other, but not with each other.
Yeah, not exactly. Not with each other. We're talking a lot, but we don't ever seem to get anywhere that really matters or that yes. has any depth to it.
Uh-huh.
And you and I were talking a little bit about this and the movie scenes that came to our minds about how this works. And one of my favorites is the Rocky movie. I think it was Rocky III. At the beginning of Rocky III, Rocky has just been completely pulverized by Clubber Lang. Just beat to an inch of his life.
Yeah.
And he's just hurt and wounded. And now Apollo Creed, the guy that he beat in the first two movies, you know, for the world title, comes to him and says, I want to train you to go back and beat Clubber Lang. So Rocky goes back to the ghettos of LA, as I recall, and he starts into training. He's lethargic. He's not into it. He's just sort of moping around and wasting everyone's time. Finally, they're on the beach. He's on the beach with his wife, and she's this little, short, mild, you know, person that hardly says anything through all the movies. And she finally looks at him and looks up at him because he's way taller than her. She says, and he has all these explanations why he's not into it. She finally just yells at him, "What's the truth? Damn it! We have everything but the truth." And he's shocked that she stood up to him like this. And he finally caves. And I'm going to say he finally mans up and he says, "You want the truth? You want to hear me say it? Fine. I'm afraid." And it's like this huge liberating moment. He is scared to death that he's going to go back into the ring and get destroyed.
Yeah.
And he won't say it. So he's going through the motions and he's acting like he's into it, into the training, but the whole time he is scared to death. And he finally says it. She finally breaks him down where he, quote, mans up and opens up his soft inner core and gets vulnerable. And it's the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And I think you had an example from, what was it, like The Incredibles?
Oh yeah, there's something similar that happens. Yeah, in the movie Incredibles, you know, it's the first movie, and I can't remember the context, but I use it in groups sometimes. The clip, and the wife looks at Mr. Incredible, and they're arguing about something, and she's like, "What is it? Like, what is it for you?" And he's like, "It's nothing. It's fine." And like they keep escalating, kind of similar, and he's getting louder and louder. And that actor for Mr. Incredible, I've seen him play in other parts, and that guy is terrifying in real life. Like he's getting more and more aggressive. And finally, she said, "Tell me what it is." And he just like screams, almost like the microphone that's recording it blinks out. And he's like, "I'm not strong enough." And she said, "What do you mean?" And he's like, and he just gets really quiet and he can't even look her in the eyes. And he just says, "I'm not strong enough. I can't do it."
Yeah. And I think right after the D, he explains a little more. He says, "I can't lose you again."
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
He failed to save her before, and now he says, "I'm not strong enough. I can't lose you again."
Yes. Absolutely.
And then she proceeds to tell him, "You're not alone in this. You don't have to go do this by yourself.
Yes. Right?
You have us." Yeah, I love that. That's a great scene. You know. Go ahead.
Oh no. I was just gonna say I think it. I'm so glad you brought that part up because I'd totally forgotten about that second half And that's exactly the case. I mean, how many, this is important for our addicts that are listening. How many of you are find yourself in a place where you feel like either because of the moral argument of you got yourself in this place, or it's your job as a husband to just protect your wife from all things hard, or maybe it's a religious backing, or it could be a number of places, but how many of you operate from a place of, I have to handle this alone?
Yes.
I have to do recovery alone. Sure, I go to couples therapy or whatever, and they talk about connecting and blah, blah, blah. And I listen to this podcast by these two idiots, and they're always talking about connection, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I put myself here, me. And so it's my job to get out of it. It's my job to fix it. It's not anyone else's job. And there's a part of that, there's an element to that piece that is correct. But when taken in totality and when done in the manner in which many of the men that I work with, and I'm throwing myself in the ring on this because I was exactly this way, is I would continue to shove down that little boy, if we want to call it right, that vulnerable person inside that was absolutely scared to death and didn't think he could ever change and was never going to be anything different. But it was constantly being overridden by this outside perspective of you do it alone. Your job to do it alone.
Yeah.
And it's not on any level. Recovery is not meant to be done alone.
Nope. It's a we proposition, not a me proposition. And I remember I was there too. And I felt like, you know, I felt like Rocky. I was going through the motions of recovery, you know, going to, you know, meetings or meeting with a therapist or going through the stuff, checking the boxes, but I was just sort of mopey and, you know, not really into it. And it's because I had not yet reached the place where I was ready to be completely vulnerable and really open myself to what was going on. What was I afraid of? You know, what about my weaknesses? What about the fact that I was scared to death that if I gave up this addiction, I wouldn't have this place to run to when life got really tough?
Yeah.
I just couldn't admit any of those things. And so it really held me down. You know, and so we start to talk about this thing of vulnerability, and I know it's used a lot these days. But I, you know, you and I agree it's really probably the most important thing that we teach. And if you want to talk about how to quote man up, it really comes to this place of, can I be vulnerable? Can I dare to open myself up? And it's not easy. It is really hard because we have defense mechanisms from when we were young to say you can't do that. Too risky, too painful, too hard, right? But it's so essential if we're going to get, you know, to where what we're describing.
Well, and like you said, the reasons behind that are so real. And we really do connect, gentlemen, with your pain, and women in cases where that's applicable, in the sense of feeling like opening up and showing someone like your partner, you know, who you really are or what you're really feeling or what your vulnerabilities are. We know what it's like to be in that place of Mr. Incredible, because I've had that exact same thought process. If I have taken this woman and this marriage so far to the brink so many times, if I lay one more thing at her feet, it's over.
Yes.
It's done.
Yep.
If I, in addition to all the other damage and the hurt and everything else that I've caused, if I vocalize that maybe I can't really cut it, that'll be it.
Yeah.
When in reality, what is that? That's a fear that not only you are having. If you're having that fear and you're listening to this podcast, which tells me that your marriage is in a certain need of repair, I can virtually guarantee that your spouse is wondering the same thing. But for whatever reason is not talking about it. Either she's feeling that way or she suspects that you feel that way. But because it's never vocalized, it's never brought into the light, there can't ever be any connection around it. And we use all sorts of defense mechanisms, right, as a way to derail situations like this. I mean, it is hard not to choke up thinking about example after example from client after client, but also in my own marriage. I look back on some of the things that I said and did to my wife from a place of absolutely 100% feeling like it's not okay to open up. And our recovery process could have been so much shorter
yeah.
and so much less difficult. if we had been willing, or if I had been willing to do that, to not meet her vulnerability with this stoicism, right? To not have my wife walk into the room, try to vulnerably share concerns with me, and for me to look at her with a straight face and say, this is how it is, lady. I don't know what to tell you. If you don't like it, there's the door and you can leave. And her walking into the back room crying. And the minute she leaves, I want to start crying because I can't believe I've just said that.
Yeah.
But I don't know what else to do, right? Because I'm stuck and I'm paralyzed in that place of fear. And I think too many of our listeners, in different ways, shapes, and forms, we get held down. We get tied down by that.
Yeah. No, I can totally relate to that. You know, I look back on, I spent so much time protecting myself. And as we've said, legitimately so, because we've had painful experiences in the past. So yes, we continue to protect. But at some point, you need to make a decision about whether you're willing to at least dare to venture out, to take a little bit of a risk, and to start to open up. Yes. And I cannot invite those who are listening more than to please just risk it, because it's so worth it. Finally learned how to open up and bless my wife, her patience and her love, and providing a safe place for me to be able to do that, which she did. And once I learned how to do it, it was like, whoa, what have I been missing?
Yes.
I just cost myself decades of being stuck. And yes, I could have made so much progress had I done this.
Yep.
Now, having said that, I don't want to be shaming in that. It takes what it takes. It yes, takes what it takes for you and me to get to the place where we can dare to do this. And I don't know how long that will take those who are listening, but I hope that this podcast will maybe help you to do it sooner than you would have.
Yes.
So how to be vulnerable, right? You know, as we kind of wrap this up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what works for me. So I've gotten to the place, maybe a little ridiculous. I'm vulnerable about just about everything. So I try to be vulnerable about my lack of being vulnerable.
Yep. So, or my inability to be vulnerable.
Yeah. So if there's been a situation where I can feel that I clammed up and I wasn't open or I wasn't fully honest, I'll catch myself. And if the people are still there that I just interacted with, I'll say, hey, you know what? Kind of wave my hand. I wasn't really very vulnerable just then. I didn't give you guys the full story. Here it is. It's like,
yeah,
oh my gosh. Or I actually, you know, when you just said that, I was kind of ticked off at you. And yeah, I just need to get Ron to tell you that I wasn't very happy about what you just said. But then I realized my ego was getting in the way. I just say it. Sometimes it's after the fact, but I'll say, hey, I just had a chance to go assess inside myself what just happened. Let me tell you what I figured out. Here you go. And people are like, did he just admit to that? And I love it. I will never go back. I refuse to go back to that stoic, you know, hard-shelled, never say what's really going on, beat around the bush. I just can't. I just can't go back there.
Yeah. Well, and there's something that's so, I think, just so viscerally powerful about, you know, we kind of reference that Mr. Incredible story, why it holds power, is when that happens in real life in a relationship, such amazing things can happen.
Yeah.
When a guy can get honest and vulnerable about, when he can lead a sentence with, I'm sorry, I know I'm going to screw this up because I'm not very good at sharing my feelings. For many of the couples listening to this, that phrase right there, you haven't even done anything else, men, that might be more vulnerable and more connecting with your wife than you've had in I don't know how long. Just that statement.
I love it.
You're leading truly out with that idea of, I don't even know if I'm doing this right, but I'm going to try.
And just to say it, say it, because that's what you're feeling. You know, because you mentioned, as we've talked about this, that a man's strength has nothing to do with being free of weakness.
Yes.
That's not what manning up is about, right? It has everything to do with being willing to see your weaknesses, to face up to them, to own them.
Yes.
And to begin to make progress.
A strong man is not a stoic, quiet guy who is able to just take on the world and never display emotion. A strong guy is a man who's able to say, I can look another person or themselves in the mirror and say, I have strengths in these areas, and I feel like I'm really good at these. These other ones I am sincerely working on, and they need work, and I'm trying. I'm not there where I need to be or where I want to be, but I am trying, and that's enough today. That is strength. Men, that is a husband that a wife can lean on. She doesn't need a granite pillar to slouch next to. She needs a man who can connect with her pain and show her his pain in a way that allows them to face those pains together.
Yep, love it. That is manning up. And again, it takes practice. It takes falling on your face.
Yes.
I fell on my face so many times doing this. I don't know. I had 1,000 face falls.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, and we're not going to give a formal assignment today, which is not something we typically do. But I guess what we would end with is kind of, I'll extend off with what Mark said, and we can wrap up. It's just to there are, I know that there are men listening right now who find themselves in that position of, they know they need to share, but they're caught in that place. And whatever needs to happen, whether it's working with a therapist, whether it's trying it in some little form or fashion, maybe it's writing down some feelings and then emailing it to your wife, or whatever it is, start to practice to get underneath the ego and the pride and the shame, and say something, because your wife is dying inside. A little piece at a time when you don't. Most of the marriages that I see end don't go out with a bang. They go quietly into the night. And this is the reason why. Don't let your marriage be a casualty of that. Don't leave what should be said today to tomorrow. You want to have a vulnerable conversation? Ask yourself, what would I say to my wife? What would I do? What would I vocalize if the world was going to end this weekend? If I had a couple of days left on this planet, what things would I say? What things would I do? How would I treat her? How would I interact with her? If you can really get vulnerable and think about that, that's a great place to start.
That's all for today. Thanks for joining us. And remember, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. Together, we can do the impossible.
To learn more about Mark and Steve and to listen to more podcast episodes, visit us at pbscpodcast.com. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.